To thank you for making Subway footlongs famous, now enjoy any regular footlong as a $5 footlong. That's right, any, including your favorites, like the savory chicken and bacon ranch. Any Subway regular footlong is just $5. Hurry in.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Sorry for my voice. I'm still a little under the weather. My kids made me sick. Don't have kids unless you want to be sick at least 4 or 5 times a year. On the phone, somebody else who has kids. GM of the Houston Rockets, one of the founders of the Sloan Conference at MIT, which is going to be March 7th in Boston. And he made probably the biggest deadline deal of the NBA trade deadline on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Daryl Morey. What's happening?
I have kids and I'm also sick, but I like it because it makes my voice lower.
Yeah, that is, I guess, one of the benefits. We sound huskier when we're sick. So walk us through everything. Because obviously you had this T-Mac expiring contract. You needed to do something with it. You had been exploring all avenues for a couple months. How did you arrive at the finale that you arrived at?
Well, I think the main thing was we were looking at, we could go one of two ways. We feel like we're looking for elite talent, and we could have gone the cap room route, or we could have gone the route of picking up players who can help us in the next season and also potentially set ourselves up to acquire a top guy going that route. We felt like, I think 8 teams are now under the cap where they can have max room, but I think there's only 4 or 5 guys to chase, and some teams are chasing 2. We felt going the other route, picking up a guy like Kevin Martin and other assets in terms of draft picks for the future, potentially, and Jordan Hill is a guy who could help us as well. That was the route we wanted to go.
And you, because you have Yao's contract, which expires a year from now, It kind of made more sense for you to plan toward the summer of 2010 more than summer 2011 more than summer 2010, correct?
Yeah, we feel like with Yao Ming coming back next season, we're going to have the pieces to make a good run. We've got a lot of flexibility to upgrade the team over the summer as well. And, yeah, as you mentioned, even with Tracy McGrady's contract coming out, we couldn't have had max room. Well, we could have, but we had it. We would have had to gut the team and lose a lot of the core guys who have been helping us win.
Right. How hard was it to give up Carl Landry?
It was extremely hard. I mean, he's probably he's a fan favorite. Very, very hard to find a good low post scorer, good player overall, and a good guy all in one package. So that was obviously the most difficult part of the trade.
And one of your best draft picks.
Yeah, second draft pick under my tenure. Very, very difficult, but we felt like we had to give up something to get something, and we've always been really, really high on Kevin Martin. We feel like he's a championship caliber two guard and something we didn't have on the team, and we lost a lot with Carl, but we felt like between Jordan Hill, draft picks, free agency, and tradable, a good trading situation that we could address that need a little bit easier than picking up a two guard like Kevin Martin.
Were you the one who called Carl Landry, told him you're going to Sacramento?
I did. It was a little bit of a difficult situation. I wish it could have gone down easier, but the trade went down actually as our team plane was in the air. So the news got out a little bit, and unfortunately when Carl landed, I guess he got a lot of texts from friends, and so he found out through a couple texts. I mean, I called as soon as the plane landed, but the news had gotten out. So it didn't go down perfectly. There was really no way to avoid it with the plane in the air. But I was the first, executive to call him. And, he handled it well. He's excited to get a starting role in Sacramento. I think it'll be good for his development.
I mean, I'd be bummed out if I got traded to Sacramento. I got to be honest. Like, you're in Houston. There's no state tax. You're on a good team. It's like, hey, you're going to Sacramento, and
you're
going
to be
in
the same hotel as the governor.
Yeah, that's true. He's got Schwarzenegger.
That's right.
Well, and also he'll, you know, on your team, he was playing, I think, 25 minutes a game, something like that. On Sacramento, maybe that moves to 36, 37. He could put up some big stats. He's got a contract coming in a year. So it might have been a good thing for him career-wise.
Yeah, I think I know Carl's, you know, sad to miss his friends. He was a big part of the team, as I mentioned. But I think in a year, he's an unrestricted free agent. Yeah, playing 35 minutes and putting up big numbers, I think will probably help him in the long run.
He'll have some trust issues, though, considering you basically cut him loose. Your draft pick. He trusted you. And you killed
him,
basically.
Well, no way did we cut him loose. I mean,
it was a mafia hit. You were like, hey, Carl, go through the toll booth. They had the nine gunmen waiting for him.
Well, I think about trades, you know, in terms of putting in pieces, you know, title caliber pieces. And we felt like, you know, Kevin Martin could be our Reggie Miller, you know, a guy who, you know, maybe didn't make it all the way to the title, but was always part of a team that was in the mix and, you know, for sure a championship caliber two guard.
Well, I had written about Kevin Martin in my trade value column a couple of days before you made the trade. And people know that you and I are friends. And I was getting a ton of emails after, like, You knew Dork Elvis was going to trade for Kevin Martin. That's why you wrote all that stuff to set the scene. And actually, like, the irony is that you and I usually, we don't talk about the trade stuff at all because it puts me in a bad spot because I like to make up fake trades and come up with weird scenarios. So if you had given me inside information, then that's, and then I write about one of the trades or whatever, it doesn't work. And if, you know, you have a responsibility to the people that you're talking to in the league, that, you know, you're talking about whatever scenario, and then if one of them shows up in my column, that's bad for you.
Yeah, I think that involved getting the Maloofs drunk, too. But
yeah, that was a year ago, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jeff Petrie calls the shots there, and he does a great job for them, so that route wasn't available to me.
Well, I agree with you on Kevin Martin, and I think, you know, this is what's interesting. You've made your bones, and I think you've become pretty notorious for being the first major stat guy, the stat-heavy GM, the guy who's got the formulas and all this stuff. But this Kevin Martin trade, I don't really feel was a statistics trade. It was about acquiring somebody that you felt was an asset.
Yeah, absolutely. We think, you know, with Yao Ming coming back next year, and even this year we think he can help us, but with Yao Ming coming back next year, his ability to hit the shots from three, attack the basket, get to the free throw line, and Yao Ming becomes the best offensive player in the league when we're in the bonus. So now we've got another guy who can get us in the bonus quicker. You know, he can do pick and roll. You know, he's just a real versatile offensive guy, as you know.
But he's somebody that really hasn't been in an ideal situation yet, and I think whatever statistical things could be run on him wouldn't totally be fair because he's never been on a team that had, you know, as I wrote last week, I think the ideal situation for him is a veteran team, guys who can set him picks, a point guard that knows exactly where to deliver him the ball, an offense that kind of runs around him the way, as you mentioned, Reggie Miller with the Pacers back in the day, even Rip Hamilton 5-6 years ago. That's a situation where I think he could transcend whatever his potential is on a bad team. You agree?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think we really felt like Kevin doesn't show well, as you point out, in a lot of different of the statistical modeling you see out there, adjusted plus minus, and you know I don't know all the other systems out there. I think Kevin always comes out sort of average. Obviously, he's got a big contract for someone who's average, but. You know, I agree. We felt like in our situation and the fit with our players was going to be very good, and we sort of said stats be damned a little bit.
Well, you also have a little bit of an alpha dog scoring issue, and you know, like I really like Ariza. I thought that was a really smart contract that you gave him, and I like the things that he brings to the table. He's been in a situation this year where because McGrady was out and because you didn't have Yao. You know, you really had nobody to step up in fourth quarter or like last 6 seconds on the shot clock when you need somebody to create. And from the games I've watched, he's been in a position where he's been doing things that maybe not necessarily he's supposed to be doing. I think he's a complimentary guy who hits wide open threes, plays great defense, runs the floor, all that stuff. He's not the guy I'd want creating in the last 5 seconds of the shot clock, but maybe Kevin Martin is.
Well, I think Trevor continues to improve, but obviously, you know, Kevin's someone who's proven his ability to score at a high rate, and he hasn't had a lot of playoff run. He did play well when they played in the playoffs a few years ago. But one thing we looked at is when they played tough defenses, when Sacramento played very tough defenses, Kevin always played better against the tougher defenses. And we feel like he's a guy who can always get his shot off. He's got that sort of flat. He's got that release where he doesn't get off the ground, so you got to respect that. And then he's got that herky-jerky motion that makes him very hard to guard. And then when he does elevate to shoot, he can really elevate and get the shot off.
Because I think this trade will make Ariza better, because now he's doing what he should always have been doing. And same thing with Battier to some degree, where you have guys now fitting in the natural parts that they were meant to fit.
So yeah, I mean, I think we believed in Trevor's ability to improve, but I think he's obviously a great defensive player, and it probably would have been difficult for him to develop into a scorer like Kevin Martin. So I think the rotation works now with Kevin and Trevor and Shane and Chase is a very solid set of wings we have.
What about the Knicks component to this? Because well, a couple of things shocked me here. One, where was everybody else? Why were you the team that was able to land the Godfather offer to basically take Jared Jeffries off the Knicks' hands? Where was, did you feel like you were competing against anybody else, or was it just you?
Well, at the end, no. And I think things worked in our favor. Obviously, the economy has made it difficult for teams to take on contracts. And I think also that everyone was sort of zigging towards creating max contract room, and that's why we decided to zag a little bit and go this route, and it turned out in our favor. And you never know what's going to turn out. We've got a great staff. We put a lot of balls in the air in terms of having discussions with teams, and you don't know which one's going to land. And this one, we ended up, things sort of lined up for us and New York. I think if we hadn't been there, New York might not have had a home to get their double max room, and that became so important to them. And there was only one home that we ended up with the deal we did, and we feel like given Donnie's goals, he was able to achieve them, and obviously we were trying to set ourselves up for having some things we might be able to trade to help us this summer.
Did you play hard to get? Do you have like Donnie's calling you at 12, and you're like, "Let me call you. Well, I'll call you tomorrow, Donnie. I'm gonna go watch this movie with my wife and have him like he's chain smoking in his office, waiting for you to call him back." Is any of that stuff?
Well, I don't want to get the details of the deal, but I think we were obviously focused on a lot of different things, and I think they were looking at different routes they could go to, and it just lined up with us.
They didn't really have any other routes though. The thing that surprised me, because I'm not sure where Sam Presti was at the trade deadline, because he's another one of my favorites. Because I thought Camby could have helped them, and he certainly had, he had Etan Thomas's expiring contract. This was the type of trade that, he's made in the past, but yet they never got involved. And then I'm not really sure who else. Like it's kind of incredible to me that you were the only suitor for this contract.
Well, I think to defend Sam Presti, he's just happy watching his player become probably the best player in the league and win every single night. So he's probably feeling pretty good. The other thing in Sam's defense is, they've got a lot of young players, and draft picks don't do as much for them. In fact, he's got, I think maybe three picks in this next draft. So
he's got surplus.
It was tough for him to envision how to add even more draft picks, and he didn't want to mess with his chemistry, which is very, very good right now.
Yeah, that's a tough one because I watch a lot of the Zombie Sonics, as I call them. In fact, I probably watch more of them than the Celtics, I'm ashamed to admit, because I just like them. I like their young team. That's just they're infectious, and Durant is my favorite non-Celtic in the league. And it's a tough one because they have awesome chemistry. And, with Ibaka and Kristic and Nick Collison, all guys that give them, whatever, that there's a certain ceiling to what they give them. Camby, I think, has a higher ceiling, as we saw last night. He had like 17 rebounds against, who are they playing? Utah. But on the other hand, so you bring him in, and then all of a sudden,
Camby,
your young guys
Camby
are playing.
38 is a higher ceiling.
Well, but as a rebound block guy, they don't have
you
a guy
mean,
averaging more
mean,
than this season.
For now.
Yeah, they don't have anyone averaging more than 6.4 rebounds or whatever.
I got you.
But my question with them, and I'm interested in your take on this, I really feel like they might do some damage in the playoffs. And that's why I think the Cammy thing was intriguing. I think people are not seeing what the team is right now actually might be a threat. I mean, they might be the third best team in the West right now. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would not. I hate to sound cliche. I would not want to play them. I think, you know, for all our sakes, you know, I hope it takes them a few years to pull it together. So, like, Portland made the first round last year, and probably if healthy would have made the second round this year. I'm hoping it takes a few years, because if it's really easy, it'll be bad for us, you know, trying to line things up for the future for ourselves.
Well, they have a guy who can score in the last 5 minutes, and really the whole game, but especially the last 5 minutes. And they're great defensively, like very, very underrated. Which if those are the only two things you have going, you're still dangerous in the playoffs, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, maybe the rebounding isn't where it needs to be, but if you can get stops and you have a guy who can score, that's an interesting playoff team. I don't care how young your team is.
I agree. You got to be a top 10 defensive team. Then you got to have an elite player who can score. And, you know, there's other components you need, but, you know, obviously the elite player who can score might be the hardest piece to get.
Were you at the Celtics? You were at the Celtics the year that they had the Odin Durant lottery, right? And you had gotten the Houston job right in the middle of that.
No, I had left right before that. I had left in April of 06.
April 06. That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah. I got out of Dodge, you know, right before that, and it worked out for the Celtics, thankfully, to not get the number one pick there.
Well, I mean, did it work out? I wrote about this 2 weeks ago.
I thought you get 5 years if you win the title. You can't. You get 5 years or something.
You do. I'm not even talking about this team. I'm saying, like, would they have been better off with Durant and not getting the OA title, but then having Durant, Jefferson, Pierce, and Rondo for the next 10 years?
I think winning the title so hard, you got to lock that in.
You got to lock it in.
Yeah.
Because that's like in football. I compared it to in football taking off the 3 points on the penalty and the field goal to go for the touchdown. Some coaches just take the 3 points. The title
I think
would
it's
be
a little better
points.
Than that. I mean, if you're the best of 30 teams, I mean, that's a really hard thing to do. I mean, I know because I'm living it every day, and no matter how many moves we think are good, and we make a lot of mistakes too. It you know to get it to add up to being the best out of 30 is obviously a big challenge.
Explain to me what happened with T-Mac, because I watched him on Saturday night. I watched the entire game. Which was very entertaining, by the way. It was the Zombie Sonics at the New York Knicks. MSG was rocking. T-Mac looked really good. Did you know that he was still at that level? Like, how did it get to the point where that guy was not even in the city with you?
Well, I think there was always a shot that, you know, he could make us look bad. I said that throughout. I think it was a situation where Coach Al and I were, you know, working him back in. Obviously not in a way that Tracy thought was best for him. We were trying to work him in into a, you know, established rotation. You know, he thought it should move quicker. We didn't. And it just came to we felt like it was best to part ways. We felt like we'd be able to, you know, get, you know, pretty much the same trade at the deadline, you know, with him in or out. And, you know, at the end of the day, Coach and I felt like him playing, you know, just throwing him out there for big minutes was not something that was best, you know, for our team winning. Time will tell if that was right. You know, I think, you know, we only wish Tracy anything but the best. He had a great, great run here, and, you know, but he was about to be an unrestricted free agent, and, you know, it was probably going to be the case, especially with Yao Ming out this year, and, we're, you know, a push for the title was going to be more difficult, that we were trading him anyway, and we felt like we were going to get, you know, a similar situation with him playing or not, and we felt like him just being thrown out to 30 minutes right away would hurt the team overall.
So he was concerned about not getting the proper amount of playing time because he was going to be a free agent?
I think that was his worry. Yeah, absolutely. I think our worry was, you know, we were playing him in short minutes for 8 games, and Coach was waiting until he felt like he was showing something in those, you know, limited minutes to start to grow it. And, you know, both Coach and I felt like, you know, we hadn't seen it yet, so we were going to continue to go along playing him short minutes working him back slow. And I think Tracy was, you know, I'm not faulting him. I think he was focused on the contract as an unrestricted free agent this summer and felt like we should be growing it quicker. And, you know, Coach and I didn't. So at the end of the day, we decided it was best to part ways. But, you know, at no point did we feel like he couldn't come back. In fact, he should keep getting better in the sense he's coming off of microfracture surgery, which, you know, historically takes a while to come back from. But, you know, he's almost going to be a year out pretty soon. And, you know, he should keep getting better.
Whose idea was it for him to actually leave the team?
Well, basically, we met with him in New Jersey. We had been bringing along short minutes. We met with him in New Jersey, and after he had sort of, you know, complained pretty vocally that he thought we were bringing him along too slowly, met with him in New Jersey and said, hey, let's meet about how we want to do this. It doesn't seem to be working for you or us. And at that point, he said, you know what, this isn't working. You know, I'm going to – let's just talk to the agent and figure out what's best. And that's when we decided to go a different direction.
I mean – All right, so you grew up, you wanted to maybe get involved in sports, you did the whole MIT thing, all that stuff. Did you ever think you'd be in a situation where you'd be working for a company that was paying somebody $23 million a year and that person wasn't happy with the situation?
Well, I think, yeah, I'm just happy to be here. Every day is
you told me to ask you tougher questions this time.
No. No, I'm happy with the tough question. No, I'm just saying, like, I'm just happy to be in the job. I mean, I thought I'd be lucky to be doing anything this fun in my life. So I just try not to take it for granted and work my butt off every day and hopefully get some good results for the franchise. But
good deflection. Nice deflection. I've trained you well. I look at that, the T-Mac situation, I think, like, when Stern talks about how the whole system fundamentally needs to change, I think it's a good example, and I'm not saying he was wrong, I'm not saying you guys are wrong, whatever, but when a contract lasts for that long, and it's for that much money, and so many variables can change in the course of a player's career over the course of 5-6 years, you know, the team really doesn't have a lot of protection. Like, what, you know, you guys had the option of basically sending him away or trying to trade him. But if you could, you know, if you couldn't trade him, then you just have to eat that contract. You were lucky enough where you were able to trade him. Some teams haven't been. If you were in charge of how this is going to go, this whole system 2011 going forward, where would you rank cutting down the length of guaranteed contracts for priorities?
Well, personally, and I'll just speak for me personally, it has, you know, this is obviously not the position of the NBA or anyone else. I mean, you know, I actually think I like guaranteed contracts. I think the team and the player come to an agreement. I think that's fair. I think at the time that was signed, I think, you know, 30 out of 30 teams signed Tracy McGrady to that contract because he, you know, when he's going well, he's one of the best talents in NBA history.
Yeah.
And so I think we ended up in that situation. But the bottom line is, you know, Tracy McGrady playing at a high level, Tracy McGrady not playing at a high level this year, he was still going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. It was going to be something where it was going to be difficult to, you know, to sign him. You know, it was either going to be easier to sign him because he's not playing well or very difficult to sign him. Either way, it was going to be hard to have him to be a core part of the team going forward. So, you know, we went with a guy in his prime who we think can be a championship caliber two guard with Kevin Martin, and we obviously picked up some other things, so we feel good about the trade.
In what is your ideal length for how long a guaranteed contract should be guaranteed in a perfect world?
I don't have a length. I think whatever the situation should bear. To me, I'd have no rules. I'd have a hard cap because I think that's fair and get to a fair revenue split with the players.
Yeah.
And then I think there should be no rules under it. I think every team should be allowed to do what's best for each franchise underneath that.
Ooh, you like a chaotic lawlessness. I like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're obviously looking for a way to help the Houston Rockets win a championship, and I think, you know, no rules except a hard cap favors the prepared.
And it would be bad for you, I think, if they did limit the amount of guaranteed contracts, because you are, you're on a pretty good run as a GM. And if you took away like the 6-year, 5-year deals that seem to cripple some of these teams, maybe that advantage gets a little bit reduced. Now, you can't comment on that because you'd be like, oh, every GM's good. But
yeah,
I'm just saying, from my perspective.
Clear that I'm just talking about my personal views on, on things. So.
But I'm saying, let's say the contracts were only guaranteed for 3 years. I think it would be a lot harder for a GM to really damage a franchise under that condition. So if you make a mistake, the mistake's gone in 2 years, basically. But
yeah,
a 6-year mistake doesn't go away.
It's harder to make a mistake, that's right.
Yeah.
But I think we want the rules to favor the prepared, meaning no rules except the hard cap, and that would favor the teams that are better at planning, better at sort of forecasting what will happen going out.
Are the other GMs jealous that you have an owner that actually isn't afraid to throw some money around?
I know a lot of the leagues, jealous maybe of Portland and, a lot of the money they throw around. And I think our owner has never been afraid to spend. And I do think that obviously that gives us a bit of an edge relative to other teams. I don't know about jealousy. I think every team just tries to go and do the best for their franchise they can. But clearly having an owner like Mr. Alexander is a huge edge for me.
I know there was a lot of resentment that you weren't at All-Star Weekend. People were like, oh, look at Daryl. He's got rich owners, got all kinds of things. He doesn't even need to come to All-Star Weekend anymore. He just sends his minions.
It was so glamorous connecting in Southwest from Raleigh to Tampa to Houston to Dallas to try and make it to the All-Star Weekend and get stranded. Yeah, that was glamorous.
Well, back to the system for a second. You guys are paying, I think, $37-38 million to two guys who have played a combined total of like 30 minutes. That's not a great system.
I think injuries happen. Obviously we'd like to have everybody healthy this year. I think Coach Adelman and the players have done a unbelievable job to get us here to being over 500, given all the adversity thrown at the team. And we're struggling right now, but I have a lot of faith in Coach and our players that will turn it around.
What are you going to do to try to convince all the big free agents not to sign in New York this summer? Do you have a game plan?
Well, sort of like
smear campaign or anything?
I think these players are going to move through sign and trade. First off, we always thought it was a long shot we'd recruit one of these top four for the guys. I think it's a long shot for pretty much all the franchises, frankly.
Yeah, but for you, if New York doesn't get anybody, all of a sudden you have a pick swap in 2011 and their unprotected pick in 2012. It would be nice for you if nobody signed there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that was part of the deal. I think obviously Donnie Walsh is all in. I think his strategy makes sense and he's going for it. But what I was going to say is I think these players are going to move through sign and trade.
Yeah.
And I challenge that there are many teams that have better ways to construct a sign and trade to get one of these players. So we feel like we're in a better situation now than we were prior to the trade deadline, even though we took on salary.
Yeah.
To chase one of these top guys, even though it's probably still a long shot.
And what is it about Houston? Because you've mentioned this to me, but you say the NBA players love Houston. Like, guys live there and they don't want to leave and they can't believe how much they like it, other than the no state tax.
Well, a couple of things. Yeah, no state tax. Obviously, it's a warm city. A lot of the players make their homes here in the summer. Rashard Lewis, just one off the top of my head being a guy. I think people love playing with Yao Ming. I think that's that can't be underrated. There's always been a history. Mr. Alexander runs a great franchise. I think we've only had three coaches in the last his whole reign since he owned the team since '94.
Yeah.
It's very stable, very well run franchise thanks to Mr. Alexander. So I think people like coming here.
You didn't mention barbecue. That's got to be in the top four.
Barbecue and there's some other aspects. We like it when teams spend an extra night in Houston because there's some good nightlife that hits the visiting teams pretty well.
Yeah, the overeating followed by a late night. That's good for you guys. It's not as big of an advantage as Denver or Utah, but it's pretty big. All right, so let's talk about stats quickly. I hate adjusted plus minus. I just think it's stupid. Where do you, I mean, is this even a stat that you guys are messing around with? Do you take it seriously? Where do you stand?
Well, I think it's something to look at. I always think of, you know, all these things are just, you know, different views. Nothing perfect at a player. There's never going to be any sort of analysis that's going to isolate how good a player is, unfortunately. And, you know, this is just one other tool. We feel like, you know, the stuff that's out in the public domain is pretty hard to use. It's so, you know, one guy will be good one year, the next year will be the next one year. It's, it's one, you know, big who's random. You know, who are the twins from, I'm drawing a blank on one of the bigs was like the number one player in the league one year.
The Collins twins?
What's that?
One of the Collins twins?
Yeah, one of the Collins twins was like the best player in the league on a just last one year.
Yeah,
it was like 3 years ago. Yeah, so one year he's the best, you know, next year he's the worst. So I think there's a lot of issues with what's out there in the public domain. We feel like there are some things we've done to improve it that make it, you know, potentially usable. But I agree, it's a very difficult one to use.
There's a couple of things that I kind of don't mind about it. Like, for instance, usually the best guys in the league or the guys playing the best will usually end up near the top of just the general plus minus stat. Like, for instance, Durant, during his scoring streak, was second in the league in plus minus. And to me, that makes sense because I watched that team, and as soon as he comes off the floor, they have a lot of trouble scoring. The issue is, like last night, Darko Milicic played 19 minutes or 18 minutes, and his plus minus was plus 35. And he had like 2 points and 8 rebounds. Like, what could he possibly done?
It's I think game to game. All it does is from game to game is maybe tell you a little story about the game. Like, the team won when he was on the floor.
They happened to win. Yeah.
What's that?
They happened to have played really well when he was
on the floor. Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's maybe interesting if you're writing a story about the game, you know, but it's not really telling you a whole lot about how good each player was in the game. But I think over time there are some things you can learn, but I think it's limited relative to some other things. And really you can't separate a guy from his role. Like Chuck Hayes, a guy we love. He's great, unbelievable guy at low post defense. So when he's playing a top post scorer, you know, his adjusted plus minus will, you know, appropriately look tremendous.
Yeah.
But if he's in the game against, you know, maybe more general competition and a different mixes of lineups, he's not going to show as well. So he can, you know, if he's in a year where all he's doing is being a specialist post defender, he's going to look great. But if he's in a year where maybe his role has expanded a little bit, he'll start to look like he is what he is, which is a very good player, but maybe not, you know, a top, you know, I think adjusted plus minus might have him be a top 15 player in the league, something like that.
And it also depends a lot on, you know, the quality of the top 10 guys. And like, let's say I'm a point guard, starting point guard, and my backup's awful. So every time he comes in, the team's just not as good. Then that makes me look better. But does that mean I'm good, or does that mean I just have an awful point guard? Those are the questions I have with it. The one thing, I do like the units. Like, I like the five-man plus-minus and the stuff like that. I do think that's interesting because you can learn some stuff in that. Like, for instance, I remember Portland last year when they went – maybe it was Portland. It was one of the teams that – I'm pretty sure it was Portland that when they went small – and it was like a limited sample of minutes, but the plus minus was really high. I don't want to definitely say it was Portland, but those are the things where I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Look at that when they play that lineup. I think that's kind of cool. But
think the lineup analysis can be interesting. The big issue with that, and there's issues with every, you know, analysis in basketball, and you know that's probably why maybe this conference panel will be interesting. But the issue there is that by the time you've got a good sense of whether a lineup is good, maybe it's 200 minutes in, someone's injured, someone's traded, something's changed. You know, so by the time you can be confident that that's telling you something, often the world's changed. I mean, I've always felt like with all the analysis in basketball, the best thing it does is just raise the right questions. So if you really feel like, you know, we feel like Kevin Martin's a great player and his adjusted plus minus is terrible, you got to go in and see why. And you dive in and you say, okay, well, that's because he's playing with this mix and he's got no other defenders on the floor. You pair him with some other good defenders, he probably looks better. You dive in and you see why he looks bad, not that you say he's bad or good. You say, you know, if a guy is a terrible just a plus minus and he has every year over his career no matter what role he plays, then yeah, the bottom line is he probably isn't a good player. But there are guys who can look bad on that who are still very quality players.
So it's almost like putting together a pro-con list, and it's either a pro or a con, but it's not one of the deciding.
Yeah, it ends up, you ask the right questions. It also raises things for watching, you know, watching video. You can say, okay, it looks like maybe he struggles when he's in a lineup with no, with no post player. So let's now watch video of all the lineups where he's been in with a post player and see how he looks there, that kind of thing.
I like the hoopdata.com, which I've gotten into this year because they tell you the shooting zones, which I think is really valuable. And you see a guy like Nate Robinson, who hasn't gotten a ton of minutes, but his stats were better to look at last year, but somebody who gets to the rim a lot. So I think, like, I watched the Celtics team. The second unit just stands around and guys waiting, you know, people shooting jump shots. It's a very jump shot heavy team anyway. And Rondo is really the only guy who gets to the basket all the time. So I look at Nate Robinson, like, well, just if I looked at the stats for this guy, I'd be like, this is great. Here's somebody who's actually going to attack the rim versus just hoisting 20 footers. Do you think that, you know, I remember we did the podcast last year where I was saying, like, you have all this information that we don't have. Now it seems like some of that information is coming out to the public.
Yeah, it's starting to come out, and we're trying to stay ahead of everything useful. But I do think the public domain's getting better. I also really like the Nate Robinson pickup for Boston.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if he can, you know, he's maybe had some issues in the past in terms of conformity to things, but I think he's coming into the perfect team. You know, obviously a great group of veterans, and his skill set is, Aaron Brooks light. You know, Aaron Brooks like, he's probably more elite in just his ability to score, get to the basket, shoot. Maybe a bit of a lesser in terms of setting up teammates, things like that. But obviously Boston doesn't need him to do that. He can play more of the Eddie House role there.
Yeah, and he's somebody that for 5 minutes a game off, 5 minutes a half, you can kind of run your offense around and let him do his thing and just kind of set picks for him and whatever. I mean, my feeling was like I felt like the Celtics team needed to do something major. And, you know, Nate Robinson isn't swinging whether they could have won the title or not. So for that standpoint, I was disappointed. But it was a good trade. He's going to do exactly what people thought Marbury was going to do for them last year and didn't.
They didn't give up anything. I mean,
they gave up nothing.
Yeah.
Were there any trades that other teams made that you liked?
I thought a lot of them made sense. You might have to remind me the
Caron Butler.
Yeah, I really liked that. I thought that made sense for both sides. I think Haywood's the underrated acquisition there. Not them, especially with Dampier going down.
Yeah.
I think Butler's a quality player. Obviously it seemed like they were going in a different direction with Josh anyway. And he can come in, he can shoot it. You know, I think, for us, it didn't make as much sense. We were looking for guys more in their prime. I think Caron's a guy still sort of towards the tail end, but probably moving beyond that potentially.
I like him. I'm not sure. That's kind of a weird team now because they basically have, they don't have a typical shooting guard. You know what I mean? They're a little bit big, and they got Marion, they got... I don't know. The pieces, I'm not sure how they fit, which kind of puts them in common with basically everybody else in the West except, I think, Denver. Denver seems to me like the most traditional team of, all right, this guy plays this position, that guy plays this position. You know what I mean? Everybody else has kind of like the Lakers are overloaded up top. Dallas is overloaded, but they're another big guy. But if you had to pick – oh, I guess you can't answer this. who do you think is the favorite to come out of the West? Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, I hate to sound boring, but the Lakers are the favorite to come out of the West.
So you're not buying the Denver hype?
No, I think they're good. You mentioned the teams I think are in it, but I think there's a clear separation between the Lakers and the rest of the West right now. Hmm. I think Dallas, I think Denver, I think Utah has been has pulled it together in terms of just playing as a group again.
They had a big win last night. They had one of those wins that makes you wonder if that now their season's heading a certain way.
Well, you know, I think Portland, maybe they deserve, you know, we were getting a lot of credit playing shorthanded. I mean, they're unbelievable. They're plugging in guys, you know, probably more difficult than even we had, and still playing at a really high level, both offensively and defensively. It's been that's been very impressive, Nate and Kevin, what they've been doing up there.
Do you miss Ron Artest?
I do a little bit. I was a big fan of Ron's.
You must miss him on the plane and stuff.
I miss him overall. I mean, I think he didn't make sense for what we were doing in terms of the stage of our franchise in terms of going forward. But you know, we didn't have any no ill feelings there. I've just he's an entertaining guy on and off the floor. You know, and it added a little excitement to my life. Every morning I might wake up and have like 100 voicemails, you know, from media and things like that. You never know.
Is it true that you made a last-minute bid for Amari Stoudemire or no?
I think those reports out there are accurate in terms of we were in discussions with Phoenix about Amari. I mean, I don't want to get into the details, but, you know, we felt like potentially that could be something that we looked at, but it didn't come together.
Hmm. What do you think of
this
draft?
My job, I sort of have to – if you asked me about pretty much every team in the league, I'd say we were exploring it. But that one got a little more intense, a little bit closer, but it just didn't make sense. I mean, with him being an unrestricted free agent in just a few short weeks, didn't make a lot of sense.
You're like a Jersey Shore character at a bar on a Saturday night. You explore all your options. You talk to as many people as you can.
I always had to explore a lot of options because I didn't have many.
Right.
I needed to put out a lot of fishing lines personally. So,
what do you think of this draft?
I think it's a pretty good draft. I think both this draft and 12 are going to be probably better. People are going to want to avoid the potential labor situation in the NBA, so they're going to come out early into this draft and make it a little better draft. I think 11 will be a little down, and I think 12 will be up because there'll be the pent-up guys who avoid the 11 situation. So I think 10 and 12 are going to be better drafts.
So you think some of the 11 guys will come out this year to make a little money?
Yeah, I think the 11 guys will come out early, and I think and then in 11, a lot of the freshmen there will stay in school and come out as sophomores in 12, yeah.
See, the real reason you don't want me to be a GM is because I can now look at these games and all the stats and stuff and know exactly who you like. You know, I'm on all your secrets. I know, like, the three guys you like. I won't say them, but there's guys that...
Yeah, it always makes it uncomfortable when you guess right, too, for me.
I'm not wrong, usually. I usually can tell.
Well, we always saw it at employers when I was in Boston, too. So.
Yeah, we've almost always agreed. Like, it's funny because we both like Kevin Martin independently of each other.
So when this trade flames out, I can blame you, Bill.
It's not going to flame out. Although I got to say, T-Mac, you better hope he tails off. He looked great on Saturday for what I was expecting. I was really surprised.
I'm not hoping he tails off. You know,
you like him.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I mean, I think there's no at the end of the day, you know, all this stuff got written about him. I think it was all wrong. I think he's a private guy, but there's, you know, he's a good teammate and a talented guy. It was just, you know, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent this year, and, you know, we didn't see eye to eye on how to bring him back.
The one thing I did notice, and it's funny because my dad and I were watching that game, and we had said it, and then the announcer said it too. There's only a handful of guys, I think, that get just a ton of respect from the referees and are at a point with the refs that I don't want to say they'll get the benefit at every call, but there's some sort of dynamic in place that you only see with guys like Wade, LeBron. It's funny, Steve Nash doesn't qualify for this for some reason. Paul Pierce doesn't. There's a couple other guys, though, that you just kind of can see it. And T-Mac's one of those guys for whatever reason. He'll get whatever call, and there's just a level of respect that you don't see that often. I don't know why that is.
Well, I think he's, I mean, top 10 most talented person born to play basketball ever, I think. I mean,
maybe that's it.
That size, the shooting, the passing, and he's very unique.
I thought that it was interesting after that game that Durant talked about what a rush it was for him to play against T-Mac and how that had been his hero growing up, and you know he had modeled his game after. Because really, he's like a taller T-Mac. It all kind of made sense to me when he said that. He's like T-Mac with freak arms and 2 inches tall.
Yeah, a little taller, a little thinner, but otherwise, I think if Kevin can develop into a player like T-Mac, I think Oklahoma City will be good.
All right, let's plug the living hell out of the Sloan Conference. March 7th.
I don't think we need to. It's like a 300-person waiting list and sold out. Mostly
it does?
There, Bill.
Can't we televise this on one of the 19 ESPN networks?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, ESPN's the big sponsor this year, which is really exciting. I mean, they allowed us to expand it to have more than 1,000, you know, people this year by moving venues. That costs a lot of money, moving it off campus, and ESPN's the sponsor that made that happen. They're going to record it. You know, I doubt it's where we're going to be carried live like the Spelling Bee or anything like that.
That would be awesome. Dorkapalooza live!
We're going live. Let's see Jonathan Kraft versus Bill Polian.
So you got an all-star cast this year. It's
yeah,
a good
I mean,
one.
starting with you, Bill. I'm on that panel with Polian and John Kraft and Michael
Cuban.
Lewis and Mark Cuban. I mean,
yeah.
It's going to be... Should be fun times. It's an appropriate title for the panel. You know, what stat geeks don't get. So good timing for that.
Yeah, it's almost we've hit this point, which is interesting, that almost a little bit of a backlash. Like maybe we've gone a little too stat heavy. And that's what we're going to discuss for that hour. Are we going to have an hour? How long are we going to have?
I think we get over an hour.
Oh, beautiful.
We're going to get like an hour and 20, I think. And, you know, I'm just planning to listen, you know, and have Mark Cuban and those guys go at it. I think it'll be. And then Michael Lewis, you can't have a better sort of guy to moderate in terms of stitching a story together for the whole
right.
thing. I think it's should be fun.
And there's going to be a bunch of GMs?
Yeah. Chris Wallace, Kevin Pritchard,
uh-oh.
Myself, Morway from Indiana.
Yeah.
Just going off the top of my head. A lot of GMs from other sports as well, presidents from other sports. Tampa Bay Rays, I guess now. I was about to say Devil Rays. You know, they're going to be there. I mean, it's an all-star cast. Once we got you to sign on, everyone else just lined up.
And there's some good media members, too.
Yes. SloanSportsConference.com.
So. All right. So you don't really have to plug it because it's already sold out.
It is already sold out. Yeah, I mean, it's actually been crazy. I'm making a lot of enemies because, you know, between the trade and the fact that we keep having to say no to all these people because we don't have any tickets left, you know, it's been a lot of arrows.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, maybe it needs to be in a bigger venue. What could be a bigger venue than the Boston Convention Center?
Yeah, we have like a hallway of that. Maybe next year we'll grow. Well, part of it's because it's run by students at the school. So
yeah.
You know they only work on it part time. Jessica Gellman's my from the Pats is my co-chair, and she's got a full time job too. So really, a lot of it was we're trying to keep it small and intimate because we just don't have the time to do anything bigger. So.
Right. And that, what is this? The fourth year?
Fourth year, yeah. Yeah.
And what would describe the goal in one sentence?
The goal, I think we can't share analytical, you know, we can't share with our in our own sport how we're learning about using analysis on sports.
Yeah.
So for me, I can learn a lot from other sports. And I think, you know, for everyone else, it's how do you appropriately use this? Not too much, and what are the right contexts to use it? That was terrible.
That wasn't bad.
I flunked the description there.
It doesn't matter.
We're sold out.
It's only your own conference.
Exactly.
I thought the most interesting thing I learned last year was when you made the point, I can't remember if somebody asked or if you just made the point about the people that want to break into sports with some sort of a statistical background because, you know, you were the first guy, there have been others, but collectively you guys have been an inspiration to anybody between the ages of, I'd say, 15 and 25, either going to college, in college, in grad school, like someday I want to do that. I can run a team. Daryl Morey did it. And you were saying that, you know, the biggest misnomer is that somebody could come into basketball now and just do what you guys have done because it's already been done. All that information's out there. All those formulas have been cracked and there's really not much further it can go. And you were saying that the person that hits it big next will be somebody that can translate like high school stats, European stats, things like that. Are we any closer to that kind of stuff?
Finding guys in China. No, I agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, folks like myself and Dean Oliver, I mean, I was working at StatsInc in the early 90s. It's not like I'm new to working on these things. And so I do think, the next trend is, it's still unknown what's going to be the next trend that creates a big edge. It could be video analysis in basketball or other sports. It could be the guys who are, you know, maybe it's a guy at Pixar who's great, who can't move up, but, you know, figures out how to analyze the sport using video analysis a lot better. It could be simulation. There's still no good basketball simulator. I think EA Sports probably is the best one out there, but, you know, all of them aren't very good. It could be, you know, I don't know what it's going to be, but someone who wants to break in needs an edge, and it can't be that I go to Hoop Data or 82 Games or something.
Right. And it does seem like over the last year or so, defensive stats, and you guys keep this secret, and most teams do, but we've seen more defensive moves. I think Seth Velocia going to the Zombie Sonics, a really good example of a trade that kind of slipped under the radar, and then they signed him to a long-term contract. But that guy's really valuable. Like, that guy's a stopper. And maybe that's where this goes a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, those stoppers, I think the quality teams always knew that role was important. The Spurs, Dallas, I'm trying to think of all the teams.
But identifying those guys was a challenge because I watched Bruce Bowen in 1997, 1998 when we had Celtics season tickets and I was going to those games. I was like, this guy needs to be on a good team. This guy can stop everybody. And he was on a crappy team. It was the worst pot. And he bounced around, and finally landed in San Antonio. Now I think teams would be able to find Bruce Bowen immediately.
Yeah, no, I think it's still hard. I think it's still hard, but I think it is absolutely something that hopefully becomes easier. But we don't want to give any of those things out. I think Cuban said it best. He said, the conference is great. I hope no NBA team shows up.
All right. Well, we'll see you in a couple weeks. What are your odds of making the playoffs? I'm sure you calculated this with some sort of weird model. You're 27 and 25 right now?
We're a couple laps off the lead lap right now. We've got a real struggle ahead of us, obviously, with, you know, so many games left, the doors and closed, but we're going to have to go on a run and beat, you know, win some games against tough teams down the stretch and win the games that we need to win. And right now we're not playing that level. So something's going to have to change. We're going to have to change our level of play or even the, you know, low odds we have to make it are going to, you know, disappear, obviously.
There's no chance Yao can come back?
This year, no. No chance. He is healing well, and he's on the right path, but even though he's out shooting and doing some light things, it wouldn't be the right thing to bring him back this year.
Well, if you don't make it, I mean, obviously that would stink, but the one good thing would be that you'd be in the lottery finally. I'm kind of excited to see what you'd be capable of in the lottery. You're always having to cherry-pick these guys in the late first round, second round. Now you'd be in, like, the, you know, somewhere between 8 and 12 or something.
Yeah,
that'd
be
kind of fun.
First time in the lottery. I actually, we were never in the lottery even in Boston when I was there. So we had to, you know, Danny had to get Al Jefferson outside the lottery, had to get, you know, some of these, you know, Delonte West and Ryan Gomes and guys like that Danny was able to do all outside the lottery.
I just thought of something. You'd be able to go to the lottery drawing. You'd be the Houston representative.
Yeah, I don't know if that's wise. I think.
Come on, you got to do it once. Come on.
We'll see. That's up to Mr. Alexander, who goes up there. So.
No, they never. The owners never go there anymore. It's usually a GM or they.
No,
have
no.
A
I mean, it's his pick, you know. So.
Oh, I want you to go. I think you should be eating as it's happening to try to say like I don't really care what's happening. I'm going to have like a sandwich during this whole proceeding.
Well, given my unfortunately I haven't slimmed down much. I think people won't doubt that I've been eating if I'm eating up there. So.
All right, Daryl Morey. Congrats on the trade deadline and good luck at the Sloan Conference.
Thanks, Armand, Bill.
All right, thanks.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
To thank you for making Subway footlongs famous, now enjoy any regular footlong as a $5 footlong. That's right, any, including your favorites like the savory chicken bacon and ranch. Any Subway regular footlong is just $5. Hurry in.